This week's show is supported by Signature Studio. And I use this myself. If you ever get an email from me, that email signature, it's all Signature Studio. Think about how many emails you send every single day. Each of them an opportunity to compound an impression, tell your story, and position yourself in the minds of the people who matter most. Most people waste this opportunity with a name, maybe a phone number. Signature Studio lets you build an email signature that works for you, featuring live testimonials, your latest podcast episode, a booking link with Calendly, or a rotating banner that stays fresh long after you hit send. It takes minutes to set up, works with Gmail, Outlook, and Apple Mail, and you need no design skills. Your inbox is the most under-leveraged channel in your business. Signature Studio fixes that. Start building for free today at signaturestudio.me.
Welcome to Building Your Leader Brand. Today on the show, Bob is speaking with Angus Nelson.
When you look at technology disrupting everyone everywhere right now, it's not going to be long before everyone in your industry, all your competitors are going to be following the same playbooks, running the same sales funnels, running all the same messaging, because artificial intelligence is going to be giving them all the guidance. And therefore, the only differentiation is the humanity behind it.
Hi there, and welcome back to Building Your Leader Brand. My name is Bob Gentle, and every week I speak with incredible people who share their secrets to building, marketing, and monetizing their expertise and the mindset you need for your business to grow and thrive. If you're new to the show, then take a second to subscribe. That way you won't miss a thing, and you will make me smile because my numbers will go up, and Bob likes his numbers to go up. Again, if you're new to the show, you will love the Personal Brand Business Roadmap. 100% free as a gift from me, 50 pages of everything you need to start, scale, or fix your expert business. So this week, we're going to be talking about a topic that is very germane in my world. One of the flavors of this, I'm going to call overwhelm. One of the flavors of this might be paralysis, not knowing what to do. There's so many ways that things can go wrong in our lives and in our organizations. And it can often come down to a few simple things. And to help me play with this today, Angus Nelson, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's great to be here.
So, Angus, you have written a book. And rather than me making a mess of your book title, tell the listener what your book is called.
The book is called Neuro-Resilient Leader. And the subtitle is The Operating System for a World at Speed.
So when I saw this book, I got excited. Obviously, I haven't read it from cover to cover yet. I prioritize science fiction over everything, but I have spent a bit of time with it and I love it. I think it's probably one of the most important topics at the moment, but I'm getting ahead of myself. For the listener who's meeting you for the very first time, who is Angus Nelson? Where is he and what does he do?
Angus Nelson is a father, husband, a friend, and former owner of two dogs, now the only owner of one dog. Last week, my oldest just passed away, sadly. I live in Lisbon, Portugal. I'm an executive and leadership strategist. I work with leaders from large organizations, whether that be a SaaS company, entrepreneurs, or I have a handful of corporate clients as well. My focus is leadership stability, helping people be stable, particularly in the world that we're in right now. You've got an era where artificial intelligence, market volatility, all the global complexity that's happening in our world is accelerating faster than ever before. My role is to help people adapt and to be stable in all of it.
I think one of the things with the speed of change, the speed of existence almost, is people often resist it. Especially people our age, because we're accustomed to things being very slightly slower. Our parents were accustomed to things being even slower. It's our generation that really grew up through the internet. So we're accustomed to things like this. But the pace of change at the moment with things like AI, virtualization, globalization, for a lot of people is quite overwhelming, particularly if you're in a leadership role, because the buck kind of stops with you, which in itself is a cliche. I've found myself and I see myself as a bit of a microcosm here, that overwhelm was almost something that I just accepted. It was like the tide would go out, the tide would come in. I would be productive, I would build systems, the systems would crash in on top of me, and I would have to begin again. And one day I discovered that's just not actually necessary. I worked out a self-regulating, self-cleansing method of maintaining my relationship with my work and life and productivity. And what it provided was a stability. And within that stability, I can do all kinds of things that I couldn't do before. Now, that happened to me by accident. But when I spent some time with your book, I realized, oh my God, there are systems for this. Can you maybe tell me a little bit about, you know what I'm talking about. I'm being a little bit half-cocked, not really having thought through the question. But I sense you probably know what I should be asking you.
Yeah. My guess is you're talking about the C3 protocol, which is kind of a systematic approach to understanding how we process information. And this was built over, you know, the last 10 years of working with leaders. And it's one of those things where, first of all, once you see it, you can't unsee it. And then second of all, it's not like rocket science where you're like, oh my gosh, this is like so out of the, you know, box. It's so elementary. And I base it off of three basically core anchors. One is clarity. The next one is capacity. And the next one is composure. And if I were to break that down, there's that cognitive layer around, you know, what is it that we need for clarity? It's we need a mindset. We need belief systems. We need identity. We need a concept and filter for how we see the world. Next step in that is this somatic or your body. This is that deeply emotional, neurological element about how we don't realize that our body is keeping score of the things in our lives, the beliefs we have, the attitudes we have, the way we react to people is all based on your body. And whether you've had trauma in the past or you've been challenged in the past, you've had failures in the past, that will oftentimes affect the cognitive and then into the somatic, which ultimately results in behaviors. And that's the composure, where people snap at each other, where they're highly reactive and they say words they otherwise wouldn't say or treat someone in ways they otherwise wouldn't treat them. And in this day and age, just as you just kind of set up in this conversation, with so much changing, people feeling uncertainty, feeling fear, feeling out of sorts because their identity was attached to something of the past, whether it's a role they carried that they've been laid off of that job, whether it's the way that they used to do their business and now they have to do the business different, whether it's a way that AI is disrupting, you know, their industry. And they're threatened by, I'm going to have to do this different. All of those are layers and layers of stressors that are underlying how we operate every day. And most people simply aren't paying attention.
I think this is one of the things that I've really noticed, that we think we're logical, rational people who everything we do is with intention. But actually, there's a layer of influence that we never really experience that has much more input on how we act, interact, how we think, what we think about, than we had any idea could even be possible. And in addition to this, you mentioned the somatic aspect. I'm maybe going to invite you in a moment to maybe define somatic a little bit. But my very clumsy metaphor for the listener is, if you've ever used virtual reality, and this is to kind of illustrate how we can react in ways we're actually completely unaware of. But if you've ever used virtual reality and put yourself in an extreme virtual environment, you might rationalize this is not real. You might know very logically it's not real. Physiologically, your body does not care. It will react as though it were real. It doesn't matter. And what we bring to bear in these situations is the only antidote we have to this is our center, I think. I don't really know how to define this. It's not my area, but you probably know what I'm talking about and how I should be explaining this.
There's an element of, you know, self-awareness and emotional intelligence that is required for any of this to have, you know, some roots. And again, that's again in leadership where most people don't pay attention. We are highly influential if we are in a leadership role. We have people who follow us, people who are, you know, taking our guidance. Well, as that leader, that brings influence and responsibility, right? What is it from Spider-Man? With great power comes great responsibility. Yeah. And how you carry yourself becomes that responsibility. And where this book really dives in deeply is that it's not about your performance and having to get it right, do it right, be right, etc. As much as it is being in a place to acknowledge when you're wrong, being in a place where you can make mistakes and be comfortable with it. Because people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. One of those cliches that people share all the time. And leadership is no longer a performance-based operation. It's a people-based operation. When you look at technology disrupting everyone everywhere right now, it's not going to be long before everyone in your industry, all your competitors are going to be following the same playbooks, running the same sales funnels, running all the same messaging, because artificial intelligence is going to be giving them all the guidance. And therefore, the only differentiation is the humanity behind it. How are the people treated? How are your clients experiencing your product or service? How are they experiencing your salespeople or, you know, the delivery mechanisms that you are administering? The people part of our world, whether it be in presence, whether it's in communication, love, empathy, kindness, those things considered soft skills are now the new hard skills. And they will only come about the more in touch you are with that somatic body, or rather embodiment of knowing who you are, knowing what you're for, and being solid in that existence, no matter what is happening around you.
It's really interesting. As I listen to you, a lot of leadership books focus on either command and control, or they talk about very functional things. Very occasionally they lean into philosophy, but what they don't very often address is, number one, the core identity, but more importantly, regulating the inner world, not just from an emotional perspective, but also from a physiological perspective, because they are connected. And like it or not, a leader is going to have things coming at him or herself from all directions. It's going to be a tough job. It's supposed to be a tough job. And this cliche of, is life happening to you or are you happening to it? Sounds like it's one or the other. But actually, I see it as a bit of a breathing process. But you can only breathe if you have that center point. Mm-hmm. When you speak to leaders, how receptive are they to the idea of leadership beginning with an understanding and an acceptance of self rather than having to fix stuff outside?
So it isn't something you just come straight out and say, hey, you're dealing with an emotional regulation issue. Yeah. What I instruct people with is structural. And from structure comes strategy. And now it becomes differentiation. It becomes competitive advantage when people start to understand that your leadership structure is the differentiation. So one, you have to have a business case for it so that you can then go into the secondary part, which is the brass tacks. Much of what I write about in my book are things that people experience but don't really talk about. It's me holding up a mirror so you can see yourself. And in that, when I communicate with the leaders that I engage with, the level of resistance they feel at first, and I explain this in the book, resistance is that thing when change comes, the front of your brain clicks into fight, flight, or freeze. Right? We've heard this before. that's no different in leadership. It's no different in any role, is you're actually having to navigate all the critters in your brain, the voices, the doubts, the fears. And it isn't that those things ever go away. And that's the thing that people who are not in leadership don't understand. They think that at one time, everything's going to snap and now I'm free. That is not the case, which is where that capacity element comes in. It's not that you relieve yourself of pressure. It's that you process pressure into power. Mm. Most leaders I work with, if you take away the pressure, they are bored spitless. Like, what am I going to do with my life if I cannot have this, that, you know, if I can't persevere, if I can't have competition, if I can't, you know, get accolades, if I can't get to this, you know, next mountain. The thing that I really emphasize in the book, that it's not the striving, it's not the meeting the goals. That's external. That bleeds into people pleasing. That bleeds into chasing after things to fill voids in your heart, your life, your mind. Those are chasing external things to try and meet internal needs. What I instruct is understanding that you already have everything that you need. You now have nothing to lose, nothing to gain, nothing to prove. You stand in your power and your quiet presence now it becomes magnetic. Mm. So that people want to follow you. They want to go where you want to go. And that becomes a completely different equation. And most leaders will never get there. Now, all of the things that you do, the accolades, the wealth, the victories, the success that you have, is a natural byproduct of an expansive state. You do it because it's who you are, not something you feel you have to do.
It's the difference between acting out of intention versus reaction. And I think a lot of people would like to think, I'm an intentional person. I'm not somebody who just reacts all the time. I think we both know that that's not the case. And probably the listeners all know that's not the case. The world is piling in on all of us all of the time. And it takes a very particular kind of person to be an island where, in spite of all of that, I have clarity about who I am, who I'm for, what I'm focused on. And I, from a higher level, prioritizes. One of the problems I think you almost certainly experience, and I'm interested in your reflection on this, is the boiling frog problem, that people are accustomed to what feels normal. And they don't necessarily understand how life could be. And in marketing, we're always told, sell the transformation, not the problem. Number one, how do you feel people react to even seeing this as a problem? And how readily do they accept that it doesn't actually have to be like that?
I think some of the most dangerous words on the face of the planet is, this is the way it always has been. You know, if this is just the way things are, then you're never going to be open to something beyond. So there's a couple of different equations. Most of the people I work with, that's not the way they think. You know, they're not thinking about, you know, staying where they are. But what they are challenged by is, there are things they wish they could experience that they have not yet, that seem to be off in someday land. Someday, one day, I'm hoping, I'm wishing, I'm praying, this thing will come to pass. Versus reaching into that future and pulling it in today and say, I'm going to build and shape my life in such a way that I can experience the kind of quality of life that I want now, instead of trying to chase after something that may never be. And what that requires of you is that you have to change how you do what you do. And so there's two pieces I would identify in this that I talk about in the book. One is the knowledge action gap. There are things we know, things we desire, things we aspire, but for whatever reason, we can't implement or manifest, even though we know it's something we want. If we want to, you know, get in better shape, We all know, go to the gym, eat better food. And yet, I'll sit and watch Netflix and I will eat my ice cream. Well, something's got to change there. The knowledge action gap is standing in your way. The other piece is resistance in and of itself. When I seek to do something different, your brain says a couple of things. One is it could challenge your brain to say, if you do something different, what it might define is that the way you did it before was wrong. And I don't know if I can admit or own that. That's on the low end of the spectrum. The higher end of the spectrum is I have to change. I have to be something different. I have to step into some other realm. I don't know if I'm ready to carry that weight. Mm. Our brain thinks and processes that kind of transformation from the eyes of stepping out of a thing called safety. Where I'm at, even if it's chaos, even if it's crazy, even if it's hard, at least I know what to expect. This other thing is foreign. It's strange. It's different. And that challenges all sorts of areas of my psychology. And so my brain will go into that fight, flight, freeze and talk me out of doing whatever that thing is. That's the resistance. The moment you say, oh, I'm going to save some money, and all of a sudden you just jumped on Amazon and dropped, you know, 650 euro. How did that happen? Resistance. You start to go into these old habits and routines because your brain perceives them as safe. And lastly, in the book, I talk about that thing in your head, that voice. Some call it the inner critic. The inner critic is an asshole. That's one of my favorite phrases. And when I was writing the book, I started by making that voice an enemy. And what was revealed to me as I was writing the book is that that voice is actually more like a overprotective helicopter parent. Its only intention is for your good. Mm. It's just trying to keep you safe. It has its best interests in mind, but it's old programming. It's like a piece of software from a decade ago. And you're trying to operate a new computer on outdated software. It's time to upgrade the software.
Yeah, it's a primal reaction from 50,000 years ago when safety was very important. Physical safety is not important in the way that it used to be, or social safety, we'll call it. One of the things you talk about in the book is, I think, self-sabotage on the one hand, success phobia. It's something I notice a lot. It's like we have a success thermostat in our brain somewhere, that we get to a certain point and somehow it moving beyond that point challenges our identity at a subconscious level and we get pulled back again. Things just start going wrong.
Yeah,
I think a lot of people can identify this, but they don't understand it. You talk about it quite a bit in the book, and I'm interested in perhaps a little toolbox that might be productive in how we approach or address this.
I'm so happy you brought this up. So I open up the book, I think chapter 2, 3, 4, something like that. So it's really early. I call it the success trap. Mm. And this is kind of what you're describing, right? And there's three elements that are on either side of the mountain of success. Do I deserve? Am I worthy? Do I have what it takes? And as you're trying to acquire this, and I'm putting this in air quotes for those that cannot see, if you're just listening, success, whatever that looks like, your challenge is going to be pushing through the limitations that you have in your mind, whether it's something someone said, it's some experience you had, something established. I love the word you said, the thermostat. You know, at what you are allowed to have or to experience. And so you will get challenged on an emotional state Do I deserve that success? Do I deserve that role? Am I worthy of this money that people are willing to offer me? Am I worthy of the, look, you don't know what I've done. I've done some shameful things. I've done some really stupid, I've made some failure. I've been divorced. I've had a child out of wedlock. I never graduated from high school. We will come up with things that will disqualify ourselves in our own thinking. And then the last one is, do I have what it takes? Yeah, I don't know. I didn't go to the right schools. I didn't grow up on the right side of the tracks. I didn't hang out with the right people. I didn't go to college. But who am I? Who am I to go out there? I'm not like this person. I'm not like that person. And you go up to the mountain. So let's say you have success because you push through all three of those. On the other side of the mountain are the exact same three. Am I worthy to have this success, these accolades, these eyes on me, this esteem that people are giving me? Am I worth? Do I deserve the income, the house that I have? My dad never made this kind of money. My mom always told me I was never going to amount to anything. Or do I have what it takes? Can I maintain this? What if I screw this up? I just had an exit. I made all these gazillion dollars, and now what am I going to do next? Because if I screw up the next opportunity, then people are going to know I'm a fraud. If I make this wrong choice, I may lose everything I've already built. I may lose the money I gained.
I think the thing that I have experienced at this threshold builds on everything you said, but my experience of it was, I'm going to have to maintain being the version of myself that it takes to achieve that. And actually, there's an identity gap, which causes a bit of a dissonance. So you kind of resist it there. I think it's simply a combining of a lot of the things, but my experience of it was, I don't know if I can sustain being that version of myself. And it feels dangerous.
Can we jump in the toolbox? Because I want to speak to some of that. That is so, thank you for sharing that. The toolbox that I would share to you who are listening at home, I said this before, you know, it's like you're operating on an old operating system, right? So let's think of it from that metaphor. Your brain is like a supercomputer, and it will operate on whatever data you give it. So the operating system is taking data of your experience, your past, your background, both good and bad, and in real time. So whatever you're listening to, whatever you're watching, whoever you're hanging out with is programming the operating system. So if you listen to a lot of, you know, talk radio, a lot of news, you're just going to be agitated all the time. Like, especially right now, there's so much fear, and it's shared over and over and over and over and over again, right? They're just shoving these things out into the nether sphere, and we're just absorbing it if we expose it to ourselves. So that becomes an input. All of these inputs of data are what we're taking in. The words that people spoke to you, the fifth grade teacher that used to, you know, talk down to you, the ninth grade opportunity that you didn't get, the time you got that big, you know, failure in your first business, blah, blah. Those become things that we hang on some emotional identity level. And that's an input. All of that's programming our operating system. So now the operating system, the brain, the computer wants to validate the data. So on a subconscious level, it will seek to attract or create opportunities, experiences, relationships that echo the experience, the data that's in your supercomputer. And so if you believe negative things, if you believe that you don't deserve, if you do believe that you aren't worthy, if you believe you don't have what it takes, life will deal you failure, sabotage, crappy relationships, bad marriages, et cetera, because you're actually creating your favorite pain. Because you believe you deserve those things. You believe you're worthy of those things. You believe that you have what it takes for those things. So the only way to change this in the toolbox is to change the inputs. And so in the middle of the book, I actually have a manifesto where I talk about the 10-minute leaders. where my goal is to help 10 million leaders spend 10 minutes a day to become a 10.0 version of themselves. Because if you just take 10 minutes, and I've proven this over and over with my clients, to just ingest inputs of power, input narratives about who you are and what you're trying to build, reminding yourself who you are because we forget, reminding yourself of what you're building, the power that you have, the lighthouse you are to the world, then your supercomputer will be programmed to that. And in the way that you raise the caliber, raise the echelon of your being, subconsciously, you will seek to attract and create higher caliber relationships, opportunities, and experiences.
It's fascinating to me. I think one of the phrases that I saw around your ecosystem was the idea of moving away from the concept of mindset, which is quite vague and something that we perhaps don't have as much sense of a control over, towards an idea of infrastructure where we can build an internal ecosystem of processes that allow us to shape growth, to shape change. It's almost like shaping a tree or a garden. We can choose to let it grow wild or we can cultivate it, but it requires toolbox and training and methodologies. I'd be curious if you maybe have any examples, without naming names, of what life before and after infrastructure might look like on a personal level for an individual, but also what that might mean for a wider organization.
I've got stories galore. I share a lot of them in the book. I have probably 120 stories that I had for the book, and I had to shave it down to like 20. One of my favorite stories, this guy, we'll just call him Brian, was running a health IT company and happened to live in the Las Vegas area. And he owned 70% of the company. He was both the CTO and the CFO at a team of 150. They were doing about $50 million a year. And he also had a crap ton of Bitcoin. Mm. So this guy financially is fine. He's still the CTO. He's still the CFO because he's a control freak. And he and I met, and he just kind of got enamored by me and my whatever. And so he just kept tracking me, and he's like, so what is it that you actually do? And we got in this conversation, and so we started working together. I started to uncover all these things. And part of it, as we got into the personal side of it, was he was compensating for all the stress, the anxiety, and he would go out and he'd play poker and he would gamble, and he would be invited into these tables in Vegas where he would drop tens and literally hundreds of thousands of dollars. One night, he went out, and the next day we had a call, and he's like, I lost $320,000 last night. And then, you know, a few weeks later, he's like, I was up 450, you know, like these are crazy numbers. And they were also a reflection of the inner turmoil that was going on inside him. And so as we started peeling stuff away and started creating new inputs, what is the dream you have for your life? I have one small kid. I got another kid that's on the way. I want them to experience the world. I want them to see the things. I want them to eat the food. I want to give them an experience, you know, that I never had as a kid. I was like, what's the likelihood of that happening on the trajectory you're currently living? He said, nil to none. And I was like, well, then who must you become? And that started the conversation. From that, he went out and founded CTO, replaced that role. Then he replaced his CFO role. He took a seat on the board because his dream was, I don't want to be stuck in this company. I want to own it. I don't want to run it. Cool. We made the changes. What else do you want? I want to travel. I want to be with my kids. I want to see the things and cool, cool, cool. What else? I actually want to stop gambling. And instead I want to be a professional poker player. I said, well, that's a different mindset. He's like, yeah. I was like, that's a different identity. Yeah. who must you become? Now he's up over $1 million in winnings in the World Series of Poker. He's not yet got a bracelet, but he's done very well. And he does that as his job. And he plays with his kids. And he travels the world and eats all the things.
So the reason I like this, one of my very first podcast interviews was with a lady who made soap. So this lady pitched to come on my podcast. And I thought, soap? Really? This person had taken soap from farmer's market. I'm going to make some soap for fun at home, to $20 million business in 4 years. I thought, I need to understand why she's accomplished this. So many people don't. And so the long and the short of it was, I asked, what made the difference? We've had lots of conversation about how you did it, your mindset, all the rest of it. And her response was, your business will only grow when you grow. And what you've identified today, and I think this is the one thing I would want the listener to take away. If you've always done what you've always done, you'll always get what you always get. And if you always are who you always have been, you'll always get what that person always had. That's from an internal and external perspective. What you've provided here is an operating system for identity change, which is sorely lacking and hugely exciting for me. This doesn't mean for the listener you're going to have to be somebody else, but it does mean you can unlock levels of yourself that you perhaps didn't even understand were there. So thank you very much for that. We're going to have to speak to this about this again, because like happens a lot of the time with podcast guests, it's only through speaking to them that I realize how important what they've shared actually is.
Yeah, thanks. And I would love to. The biggest piece, if I were going to leave people with, is permission. You cannot experience expansion until you give yourself permission. And it's not going to come from the outside. It's not going to come when you think like, oh, I woke up one morning and suddenly I feel confidence. I was like, no, confidence only lives in the past. It's never going to come in the future. You can't be confident for anything that's come. What you're looking for is certainty, and certainty is impossible. So really, all you're doing is you're taking your next best guess according to whatever your intuition, that spirit, that guide, that power, that imagination, that intuition is what made you. It's what built what you're experiencing. And you've forgotten how powerful you truly are. And when you give yourself permission to reconnect with that power, that being, that audacity, that belief that I can figure this out, only then will you step into the new.
It's one of the ideas you bring in the book, and this is not to keep pushing that much longer, but it's this idea of a sovereign state where most people, there isn't that much internal sovereignty. They're governed a lot of the time, whether they like it or not, by external circumstances and influences. But getting to the point where you have this stable center allows you to stop thinking about intention as a cliche, but as a reality. I now feel like I have the rudder. I also have the wind. I can go where I want. And actually, that can be quite scary. And it's a whole new world. But I think that particular conversation is one we maybe keep for another time, because I need to get into Angus Nelson's three things. So, Angus, three things, three amplifiers. I keep forgetting to call them. What are three things people can go and do? It could be mental models, books, podcasts, practice.
To become a place of expansion, one thing you can do is to learn about meditation. Meditation to me has been a game changer. It's, if again, we stick to that metaphor, if your mind is this supercomputer, sometimes you need to defrag, right? And I, in no way am I, a super powerful, awesome, experienced meditator. All I do is I go on to YouTube and I find different meditations, and I just have a running spreadsheet. When I like one, I just add it to my spreadsheet. So I have something to go on different topics. Myself, I'm too ADD to just listen to gongs and waterfalls. I need guidance. So I listen to stuff that has more guided meditations, helps take me into a space or a place. That's number one. Number two is, who are you hanging out with? Mm. go find someone where you are the dumbest, poorest person in the room, and they don't make you feel that way. That's a powerful relationship. Someone who pulls you up, someone who challenges you to think different. We have to get into rooms that are bigger than us, that scare us, that make us feel like we're strangers. If that's what you feel when you walk in the room, you're exactly where you need to be. And number three, I would say is, if there's anything you should do, it's not about another book to read, another conference to attend, all I want to say is this: the doing you need to do is in the be. Start listening to your intuition. Start listening to your gut, because the power that you're looking for, you already possess.
That last one requires a little bit of time to sit and reflect on. Meditation, I totally get. I think a lot of people really don't have an appreciation of the different places their drivers can come from. And being able to calm the internal waters and understand what is the constant that sits in the center is a very rare experience normally. And to normalize that experience, it actually allows you to move towards that sovereign state a little bit more productively. I absolutely echo the circle, and I'll tell you a story around this. So when I knew this was what I wanted to do, what I'm doing now, this is what I really wanted to do, I knew that in order for me to do this, I was going to need to actually do the work as well. I was going to need to be super visible and look comfortable, confident doing it. And I'm a naturally, outrageously self-conscious, shy person. And it was hard. And I remember being at a personal branding conference. There are such things, people. I should probably do one now. Anyway, I'm sitting at a table with five or six other people, and I'm telling them, this is what I want to do. And I'm really struggling. Can't even post a selfie, which is ludicrous. Spend 5 minutes on LinkedIn. I'm literally LinkedIn selfie guy. But back then, this was a mountain to climb. And I remember sharing this and thinking, hold on, Bob. Because I'd been working in search and rescue for 15 years, very comfortable doing terrifying things, but I can't post a selfie. And I looked at, well, how do we train people to do scary things? And it's a gradual process of desensitization, a gradual process of normalization. But one of the most productive ways of accomplishing this is spending time with people for whom unusual things are normal. And this kind of speaks to what you're talking about, that you might think this future version of you is unrealistic. Spend time with people who are already occupying that reality, and suddenly it becomes actually inevitable. It becomes the natural next evolution. So I hadn't thought about that for a long time, and I probably need to take my own medicine and yours once again. The power of the doing is in the being. I really need some time with that. Mm-hmm. Angus, yeah. If people want to get closer to you, if they want to find out more about you, and also what an ideal client looks like for you, because we haven't spoken about that.
Sure. Well, first of all, I want to give you my book. If you've been listening this far into the show, then your reward is that you can go to freebook.vip, because you're a very important person, and get the book for yourself. It is more important to me to get this information in your hands than it is for me to make a buck off my book. And my publisher probably isn't thoroughly excited with that. But you know, if you get through the book, you can actually see what's inside. And if you want to go buy something or the audio version later, then awesome. I could care less, because I want to make a difference. This world needs to change. We're in a vacuum of people who don't know who they are. And then lastly, you know, the traditional success that we seek is not, you know, in what you accumulate, kind of like what we were saying before. The human success is what we want. That's what we're looking for. That expresses who you are. That is expansion. And most leaders, they don't need more tactics. They actually need their mind back. They need their bodies regulated. They need their presence restored. And that's what the neuroresilient leader does. That's what it's all about. The people I work with are people who in transition. you just got funded. You're maybe just had an exit. You're in a place where you're running a team and the team seems to be running you. Those moments of inflection is where I operate best. Secondarily, I have other products that you can experience if you're not at that level, but you want to learn about this expansion. And you can find those on my website. But in particular, if you download this book at freebook.vip, I'm going to give you a 10-day experience so you can see exactly what we're talking about. And that comes with it. It's all free. It's a gift from me because I want to make a difference in you. If you like the copy, if you like the words, let them sink in. Read it. Read it slowly, intentionally. Use it as a coach. Use it as a guide. And do the work. Do the practice. Because the revolution isn't coming. The revolution that you're seeking is in you already.
I think this is extremely important. One of the things we haven't spoken about, for example, is AI. And one of the things I find myself repeating again and again is an AI, for most people, is an amplifier. And if you're a productive, honest, creative person, it will amplify that. If you're a lazy, unproductive person, it's just going to help you create garbage. And what is going to drive success in the future is being something worth amplifying. And I think this is where your book has a huge contribution to make. So thank you very much for that.
My pleasure.
For you at home listening, that does bring us to the end of another episode. If you've enjoyed the show, again, as well as freebook.vip.
VIP.
You can also download the Personal Brand Business Roadmap. 100% free as a gift from me at amplifyme.agency/roadmap. The one thing I will say is the free book that Angus is offering is going to be great. You should 100% get that. But I almost guarantee you're going to want a physical copy because I know, having spent a little bit of time with it, I'm going to want sticky notes in there. I'm going to want to write in it. I'm going to want to do all the stuff because this is going to be, as you described it, a handbook for becoming. And the one thing we all know is we all want to become because we don't want static. Guaranteed. Angus, thank you for your time. You have been awesome.
Thanks so much, Bob. You too.